Good morning, Unity Renaissance. How are you on this brilliant, beautiful Sunday morning? I had the opportunity to hear from our minister, Paula McDeesey. She and her team, Richard, of course, and many others are traveling through Ireland, and they're looking at 12th century churches in Ireland. I wrote back to her and said, see, here in the United States, we get to look at a church and go, this church is over 50 years old. No, it can't be. Not possible. She sends her best, and I'm very fortunate. I'm Christopher Naughton. I'm the president of the board. Very fortunate to be sharing this dais today with two of my favorite people. What else would I say? But they are. Heidi Kohlberg, our vice president, will be our platform assistant, and Teresa Cyrus, I have known for 15 years, and she is an entrepreneur. She has been an active member with Landmark Education and the Forum, and she has been a treasured member of our Board of Trustees for many years and just a very dear friend of mine. Here at Unity Renaissance, we like to start our Sunday mornings by saying our vision and our mission. Please feel the words as we say them this morning. Our vision is a spiritually awakened world, living in peace, love, and joy. And our mission, we transform lives that transform the world. Just take a moment, close your eyes, just get centered. And so many things when we come to a Sunday service, it doesn't matter which church it would be, sometimes we do things by rote. So today, let's think about the words that we're saying and feeling. We listen to the daily word. Let's try to be as present as possible. And so take the words of our vision to your heart right now. Can you see a spiritually awakened world living in peace, love, and joy? Can you see it? Are you part of it? And our mission, are we transforming lives that transform the world? Are we transforming our lives? And feel that deep in our hearts. And staying on that path, we'll be on the path of a holy, holy way.
We're going. Thank you so much for allowing me to be a contribution to you. So today's talk is based on Romans chapter 12, verse 2. And be ye not conformed to the world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And I've paired that with the unity principle that says we create our life experiences through our way of thinking. So one day, I had had enough. I was tired. I was exhausted, physically, mentally, and emotionally. And this feeling had been coming on for so long, and I had become so used to it that I scarcely noticed anything amiss in my life or the level of unworkability that had come into my life. Are you familiar with the anecdote of the frog being burned alive, boiled alive? Okay, so the premise of the story is this. If you throw a frog into boiling water, its immediate reaction is to try to escape by jumping out. However, if you place a frog in cold water and steadily increase the temperature of the water until it's boiling, you will kill the frog by boiling it alive, and it won't even know. It will make no attempt to escape. So this is a metaphor that is often used to describe the inability or unwillingness of us to react to threats that gradually occur in our life. So I invite you to call me Froggy. Right? So at 44, oh, by the way, so let me introduce you to two of my children, my oldest, Aziza, my 16-year-old, Asha, and my bonus son. This is their dad's son, Aiden, and he has been staying with us or will be staying with us for a few weeks. So at 44, I had ignored the signals that were telling me my life wasn't working for years. My motto, is it broken? No. Is it bleeding? No. Good. Walk it off. Keep moving. So over the last 10 years, I had steadily ignored dealing with no less than about 20 of the 43 events that the Holmes Raw Stress Scale says that can affect your health and well-being inevitably and strongly. So my existential crisis was inevitable. Now, Wikipedia says that an existential crisis may result from, be a diagnosis of, or be found in addition to major depression, dissatisfaction with one's life, major psychological trauma. This is some of what I was dealing with. I had reached a personally significant age, you know, something like 60 or 40 or 16. I had had a separation and divorce. I had had several people that I love and were close to die. I had had a new love, major loss of, as I said, people in my life, and children leaving home. Two of my children have left home. And that's just some of what I had been dealing with, or stubbornly refusing to deal with healthily. So some of the other characteristics of an existential crisis are the sense of being alone and being isolated in the world. You're in a room full of people, but you feel so alone. A newfound grasp or appreciation of one's mortality. Up until last year, I had had people in the periphery of my life die, but I had never had people like right here, my brother, several friends, die. And that really, that was shocking. It shook me up. Also, believing that one's life has no purpose or external meaning, searching for the meaning of life, shattering of one's reality or how the world is, or it may even be the cause of something pleasurable in your life. Something good happens to you, and it rocks you so much that it leaves you seeking meaning. And usually, it provokes the sufferer's introspection about personal mortality, thus revealing the psychological repression of said awareness. Somewhere in your consciousness, in your subconsciousness, you knew it was going on. You knew that you had to deal with it, but you didn't. You weren't going to. Existentialism asserts that a person can and does define the meaning and purpose of his or her life. And therefore, we must choose to resolve the crisis of existence ourselves. So can you relate to anything that I've been sharing so far? Right? Yeah, great, because that makes us all normal. Isn't it funny how we go through these circles of life, we learn something and we practice it, and life becomes great, and then somewhere along the line, we stop doing what works. You know, that roller coaster of life? Yeah. Well, we have to often relearn the lesson until we disappear those unproductive ways of thinking and being that we have. It also implies that there is an internal process, that existential crisis thing. It's an internal process that we have to go through. That the ideas or the change will not occur from the outside. So there's a quote that I like a lot. If an egg is broken by an outside force, life ends. If broken by an inside force, life begins. Great things always happen. So when I woke up one day feeling like I had outgrown my skin, it was both a familiar feeling and it was foreign at the same time, because I had been there before, but not exactly. You know what that I'm talking about? Yeah. When Romans 12:2 says, be not transformed to this world, We could infer that it's talking about the present state of things, to those unproductive ways of being and acting. These words that were written thousands of years ago seem to speak to the inevitability of being in a place in our lives at some time or another where challenges force us, compel us to see things differently. Because let's face it, when life is going supremely well, we are not always in an introspective state of mind, are we? You know, so for many years, that was the case with me. My life was going splendidly. And somewhere along the lines, I lost sight of my priorities, what was important to me, and what worked in my life. I came to a place where I felt I didn't need to maintain. You know, kind of like, been there, done that. I've become a master now. Yes, you can also add arrogance to Froggy, right? But that's pretty much, I mean, the only thing I think that I'm qualified to speak to you about are my experiences and how it occurred for me. And so I really, when I looked at it, when I was honest with myself, discovered that I really thought I knew it all, that I had arrived somewhere, and so I didn't really need to maintain at all. So you know how that went. Not very well. So the verse goes on to state, "Be ye transformed." Transformation, much like metamorphosis, implies a state change. Think of the egg breaking from the inside. A chick is about to hatch. That egg will never be the same, but it doesn't matter because what is about to evolve is even more magnificent. The transformation is meant to be complete and permanent. Further, by the renewing of your mind, the dictionary defines renew as to resume after an interruption, which to me implies that my journey is meant to have periods of ups and downs, of interruptions, and what I view as setbacks. They may not be that, but that's one of the ways that I've looked at them, as setbacks. And that it's only as I practice my changing my thoughts and the things that work in my life that I'm able to transform those things that don't serve me. And I'll have you know that I take solace in those words, be by the renewing of your mind, because seemingly that verse is saying that we are going to move backwards at times, but if we consistently renew our thoughts, words, and actions, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and that perfect will of God. That is, our lives will become a fulfillment of all that God has promised for us, supplying our every need and making sure that all things are working for our good. So my aunt, the woman who raised me, died less than 2 months ago. Just 26 days after I found out that she had terminal cancer that had metastasized to several parts of her body, including her spine, which was the reason when I talked to her like 2 to 3 times a week, I would hear her groaning, but she was telling me there was something else. And so less than 26 days after that, she was dead. So I found myself not only dealing with, you know, the human aspect of things, which is, I should have known. And all those times I was talking to her in the dozen or so times over the past 6 years that this thing had become visible on her body, but she was hiding it, I should have known. I should have smelled something. I was dealing with my regret and my guilt over not getting my children to see her in time, which was a request that she had made. So on top of that, I also had to deal with the fact that around that time, personally and professionally, I was investing a significant amount of money in various areas of my life, in various things. And so when I was faced with the prospect of having to renew my girls' passports because I had let them expire 2 weeks before I found out, I also had to deal with expediting their not just their passports, but also buying last-minute plane tickets, which, if you know, there are no such thing as bereavement fares anymore. So when you have an emergency, you're going to pay whatever the airline says you're going to pay. And so, of course, I'm going to get myself and my children down there. That's not an option. But what am I going to do to make that happen? Am I going to borrow? Am I going to get a loan? Am I going to move something from somewhere that's going to cause a challenge for me? All of those things were going through my head. Because up until that point, who had been being in my life was challenges that, you know, that's, it's inevitable. Challenges are what I face. You know, good things don't really last a long time in my life. I had all these unproductive thoughts. While even though I knew that they weren't true, there was a niggling thought every time I said them, you know better. I got something out of continuing to dwell in those thoughts. I got to be a victim about my life, not be responsible, blame people. If only my children would act differently, would they clean their room? That would make it better. You know, well, if I had, you know, a love interest, you know, like maybe a young hot Korean guy, right? Then that would make it all just go away. And I knew, because we all know, deep inside, we have this compass that tells us when we're off. So I knew. But at the time, it was just much more convenient to continue to have those thoughts and take those unproductive actions, transfer them to actions. But in that moment, as is often the time in our lives, you also have a voice that says, that's not so. There's something else waiting for you. You don't have to worry. You can rest easy. It's all taken care of. And that voice is often subtle. So if you're moving around busily, you might miss it. But if you listen to it, great things can happen. And so in those moments, I said, okay, I'm going to put my trust that this is going to work out. I don't know how, but it's going to work out. And so I move steadily forward. Now, I wouldn't say that I did it perfectly because my old thoughts kept coming back to the forefront. Coming back to the forefront. It's not going to work. You're going to buy the plane tickets, give it to the State Department, give them the information because you have to in order to expedite your passport, but they won't come through because they don't guarantee that they'll have the passport for you. They just say, we'll do our best. And so it worked, and I found myself down in Trinidad, myself and my children. Now, I didn't have the money to replenish what I had used, so the problem wasn't quite resolved, but I kept moving forward. So I, along with my stepmother, we're the executrices, tricky word. I'm an executrix. She's an executrix. The two of us are looking after my aunt's will. How's that, right? Within, I don't know, a few hours of us being there, she came to me and she said, so how much did you spend on the plane tickets? I told her. Didn't think another thing of it because we had things to arrange. Within 2 days, she came to me and she handed me a wad of cash. And she said, here, this is for you. It was all the money I needed for the plane tickets. Because unbeknownst to me, there was a provision that my aunt had made for exactly situations like that. And that's often the case. We're going all our life, we're worrying, we're stressed and anxious about something when it's already been worked out. It's already been resolved. So my friend TJ lost her purse on Tuesday, last Tuesday. She thought she'd left it on the roof of her car. Now, I should say that my friend TJ is brilliant. She's an expert branding expert and website developer. And in that purse, among other of her valuables, was a jump drive that had all of her personal website information, all the content for every project from every client, all her royalty-free images and music for the past 5 years, since 2010. And she was distraught. So when I spoke to her on Tuesday morning, she said she had tried to call the bank, but they said they couldn't do anything at that time. last night, the night before, when I spoke to her on Wednesday morning, So they said, call back on Wednesday. So she said, you know, but I'm not even going to do anything about it now because I am going to leave it to God. It's out of my control. And I have to believe, I'm choosing to believe that God is engineering this process for my good. That very day, she decided to go to the library. She had to get some work done. So she just has this thought, fleeting, check out the information desk. So she goes to the information desk, speaks to one of the ladies working there. Did you find a purse, small black purse? The girl says, no, immediately. She says, I would have lost it last night. So then the girl kind of shifts her body and looks at my friend with her eyebrow kind of raised, kind of quizzically. Without saying a word, she walks over to the counter, takes a logbook, and the very last entry, small black purse, in those very words, small black purse. So my friend starts to gasp, and she's so excited at the possibility that this is going to work out well. And the girl says, but someone checked it out already. See that signature? And then my friend's heart just drops. And meanwhile, she's close to tears because, you know, just the emotions of it all. I think I've lost it. It's so valuable. I think I found it. Hippie, yippie. Oh, no, maybe not so quickly, right? But again, the girl looks at her. And my friend is wondering why she's looking at me like that. She backs up and she goes a little ways off in the back. And she comes back and she's holding a purse aloof like Vanna White. Small back purse, right? So my friend starts to jump for joy and she immediately breaks out in tears. She's sobbing because she says, you just don't understand what that purse means to me, what's in it. So she claims her purse and she goes on. Now, my friend is also very introspective. I admire her greatly. She's a great inspiration for me. And I just love her and I'm privileged to have her in my life. So I ask her, I say, what have you learned from this experience? She says, well, I learned that I don't handle loss well. I learned that I still hold on to things and people too close and too tight. I learned that God is engineering my circumstances and that there is great strength and peace in knowing that even when a situation looks bleak, looks impossible. Because I'll tell you, when I was dealing with the tickets and the passport, it looked pretty impossible to me. And when she thought she had left it, her purse on the roof of her car, I mean, what are the odds that you would have your purse turned in after you've driven off with the purse on the top of your car? But she said, even though it looked that way, she learned that it was never too late. It is never too late to turn to God. She said, God loves me and my mama because him doing these things is a demonstration of that. She learned many things from this, which is pretty amazing because these things happen to us all the time. And we either don't have the outcome we want, so we make up like meaningful stories that don't empower us and we move on in life, living as if those stories are true. Or they work out for us, but we celebrate for a moment, yay, thank you, God, and we move on. So it takes a level of commitment and dedication to then turn and look at that experience and say, what can I learn? What can I take forward? Because it's not the truth. You don't have to. But, I mean, it's immensely valuable what she did. So she said that it's okay to feel what we feel regarding the circumstances, as long as we don't allow those feelings to cripple us, we don't stay in them too long, and we move to know the truth and operate and act on the truth, and that God had engineered this process to perfect her character. She could so easily have gone to, why me? Woe is me. I never catch any breaks, and 100 other defeating stories. But she didn't. Instead, she shifted her focus from the negative to being disempowered and trusting and being grateful in advance, even without evidence that the outcome would be worked out for her. Now, can we conclusively say that how she handled the situation had anything to do with the outcome. Did it correlate in any way? We don't know. We probably will never know. But at the very least, she saved herself a lot of stress and anxiety. She allowed herself to be open to what is possible. She faced a fear of hers, the fear of loss. She dealt with it, and she came out at the other end better than before. So how do you do that? What can you put in place that will have you shift your thoughts, your focus, so that you can shift and change your life? Well, how we got to the way that we are right now is habits, things that we do ritualistically that may not serve us very well. You know, I'm supposed to be working out at 5:30 in the morning. It's pretty much the only consistent time that I have that works. 5:30 in the morning is a stretch for me, especially because oftentimes I'm going to bed at 2 or 3 in the morning. And so what often is the case, my ritual at this point is the alarm goes off, I snooze it. I snooze 10 times, and then I go back to sleep. Right? So, in transforming your thoughts so that you can have what you want in your life, have what God intends you to have, the universe, practice thinking, talking, and acting positively, even when you don't feel that way. Focus on what you want, not what you don't want. Remember that all you need is the faith of a mustard seed. I think if I had calculated the times when I thought negatively versus being positive about the ticket situation and the money situation, I think I would have found that my negative thoughts or disempowering thoughts by far outweighed the positive. But it still worked out. And for me, that's just a demonstration of the fact that while I'm on my journey, I only need a little bit. And God is willing to reach me more than halfway. I dare say, even go the distance for me. And I would assert that it's the same for each and every one of us. Remember, it's an internal process. So go inward for as little as 3 to 5 minutes and take the nurturing that God wants to give you. Take the coaching and all the affirmation that you need that in the silence you often find. If you can't manage it on your own, reach out for support. There's no shame in that. A book, music, a trusted friend or advisor, church. Surround yourself only with those things and people who support your development. And finally, repeat the first three steps over and over and over and over again. As Thoreau says, if one advances confidently in the direction of his dreams and endeavors to live the life which he has imagined, he will meet with a success unexpected in common hours. Thank you. We're going to get ready for our meditation. So if you'd like to settle in the way that's most comfortable for you, please do so. Let your body rest. And when I say rest, I mean starting from your head, your ears, your scalp. Just let it all release. Oftentimes, we're not even aware of the fact that we're tensing up in all areas of our body. Let your shoulders settle. Let your stomach unclench. Breathe deeply in and out. Breathe out anything that stands in the way of you receiving. And breathe in. Peace, receptivity, willingness, love. Allow these feelings to flow in. Allow anything that's not serving you to flow out. and be ready to sit in the silence. Gently, very gently, come back.